empty side. Should I dance or should I die? I can't decide. Okay, we are live. So this is the fifth episode of Misery Tourism's Misery Movies podcast. And I'm Will, and I'm joined today by two of our usual contributors, Sarah.
Hey, guys.
And AJ.
Hey.
So today we are going to be discussing the film, the Japanese horror film. I guess it's Wikipedia says it's a horror film, so I'll believe Wikipedia. Suicide Club. And this is our first podcast of the new year, on the first day of the new year. I don't know about you guys, but I am, just from a Misery Tourism perspective, I'm a little sad to see 2016 leave. But I guess
it was a great year.
It was a great year if you were a terrible human being.
That's true.
Especially if you were a terrible human being running for public office, and it was a phenomenal year. Anyway, as usual, we're going to split this podcast really into two roughly equal parts. The first part is going to be kind of an overview of the film and our reviews of the film, and that part will contain no spoilers. And we're going to follow that up with the second half of the podcast will include spoilers and a more in-depth attempt to tackle and understand the film and really dig in deep and try to figure out what the hell was going on here. So with that in mind, this film was Sarah's choice, so maybe she can introduce it to us.
Well, it's a very convoluted movie, but I'll keep it short. So basically, a lot of people commit suicide for no apparent reason. And that's really all the movie's about, is trying to figure out why. And there's a lot of gore and blood. And if you like gore and blood, you should watch this movie. And if you like suicide, you should watch this movie too.
Yeah. I mean, I like suicide, but I'm not sure I'd watch the movie again. I mean, I am generally a big fan of suicide in film, but...
In this one, though, there's nothing deep about it. Well, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't hit an emotional chord, at least not most of the time.
Right. I don't really like my suicide without the accompanying, despair and clinical depression. Like, I like a good build-up to my suicide. I like to watch people, wrestle with, like, existential questions and deal with their angst about living and then decide to kill themselves. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it, right? This is, in some ways, I guess, at least part of this film is a kind of horror procedural where the police are trying to figure out why all these mass suicides are happening. Why, in the first scene, and I don't think this is a spoiler since it's literally in the first scene, like 54 Japanese schoolgirls throw themselves in front of a subway train. And that's kind of the incident that catalyzes, that gets the rest of the narrative moving. And it's kind of, I guess, a horror mystery film after that. It also with a lot of other stuff going on. And I'm not sure about the best way to tackle this. Sarah, were there particular things, just speaking broadly about the film, that you wanted to discuss without getting into spoilers?
Well, I know I mentioned this to you a little while ago, but there really is almost a supernatural theme to this movie, even though there probably isn't. But I think the fact that everybody seems really happy to commit suicide in this, you know, they smile, they're just like robots as they do it. This is really, that's not natural. So many people, especially, you can't all be that happy about, you know, jumping off of buildings or throwing yourself in front of a train or, you know, cutting off your fingers. It's so that's why this movie is like, you can't get emotionally involved. I think at least I didn't get emotionally involved because, I mean, it is so silly, but you don't really get a chance to connect with any of the characters. I feel even characters who are in several scenes, right. I feel like you don't really get to know anybody in particular.
Right. That was one thing I have to agree with you with, is that to me, well, first of all, there was a lot going on in this movie. This movie packs enough content for, like, AJ and I were arguing about how many movies, but for several movies, for several different films, there's several different strains going through here. There are several different potential films that could exist, all packed inside this one film. And this film is only really like an hour and 50 minutes long. So none of those strains get developed particularly in particular depth. And on top of that, more maybe even more importantly, none of the characters get developed with any real depth. So I agree with you. When it reached that natural point in movies like this, when, you know, major characters or theoretically major characters, characters we were supposed to perceive as protagonists, start to be drawn in and start to experience, start to be put at risk, or however you want to put it, when it reaches that point, which is a natural point in pretty much any horror film, where suddenly, oh no, like there's stakes here for the protagonist. I didn't really give a shit because I'd only seen the protagonist for like intermittently, and during that time, not much character development had taken place. And on top of that, I'm just going to put this out here, and I'm not sure to what degree it was intentional or unintentional, but I thought the acting was pretty poor for the most part. I don't know. How did you guys feel about that?
I didn't particularly notice that the acting was very poor. I mean, it seemed kind of an afterthought to me. Of there were other things that bothered me more. I didn't really put too much investment.
That's exactly it, actually. That's how I think about it too.
There's also a little bit that might be lost in translation, you know, between the languages. I know I spent some of the film at least like sort of patting myself on the back for understanding some of the words, and that probably took away from some of my ability to notice, you know, whether or not they're actually acting.
Right, because you were actually born and spent part of your childhood in Japan, so you know a little bit of Japanese.
Yeah.
Whereas I know no Japanese at all. So I don't know. I just found that, for me anyway, a lot of the acting was either very stiff in the case of most of the police officers, or very exaggerated in the case of most of the like horror scenes, where everyone was either chewing the scenery, or they were giving these really hammy reaction shots, like, oh my God. You know, it was like the like and the screaming and the like, it's all the worst parts of these kind of B horror movies where it's like, okay, you're scared, act as scared as you possibly can. And you
think
know,
that ties into something that I didn't like, but didn't really peg it as the acting. It seemed more stylistic to me, of like you can notice in some scenes where it's spectacular, and I won't go into specific detail until the spoilers, but it's spectacularly unrealistic. Like, that's probably another note about the gore, is it's very unrealistic, and some people would enjoy that, I think, but it's not specifically that it was unrealistic that bothered me, but the fact that it was like aesthetically the type of gore that it was. I'm not sure what about it really turned me off, but I really disliked it.
I mean, the blood in early scene is very clearly water with food coloring or some kind of dye in it. It doesn't have like the consistency or anything of blood. It literally washes over the subway platform like water. I actually, there was something really interesting stylistically going on with this film that I think I liked, although I'm not sure if I liked. Because you're right, like at some moments the gore and the blood is obscenely, like it's either obscenely poor special effects or it's intentionally exaggerated and intentionally off. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It could be intentional, it could be unintentional. There are some moments where, like, any scene that involves blood, the blood is so overplayed that and it like spurts up like a geyser in some scenes. It's like it's so ridiculously over the top. But some of the like gore involving like prosthetics and fake body parts and stuff was reasonably real looking. But anyway, you get this kind of hyper stylized effect with the violence, or certainly this over the top presentation with the gore. Whereas the rest of the film is shot almost documentary style, like with handheld cameras, and like you don't like the kind of the gore is in this film is obscenely over the top, totally unrealistic. But a lot of the but the camera work and stuff, and a lot of the parts of the film that aren't about like blood and gore are shot almost like documentary style, right? They're shot, a lot of the camera work is very clearly with handheld cameras. A lot of it is, I mean, there's something very naturalistic about a lot of the subway scenes and the city scenes. The scenes inside, like, the police station with the police and inside people's homes, like, it's not like there's not many special lighting trips going on or anything. It's not like they go for wide angle shots or try to overpower you and make it excessively ominous. If anything, the presentation there is often very, maybe intentionally drab. Like a lot of the interiors of these buildings have this almost like pea green kind of 70s look to it. And it's very, so I don't know, I thought there was something stylistically interesting there as opposed to the usual horror movie thing where it's like, let's make everything as dark as possible and as exaggerated as possible. There's definitely a weird contrast going on there between like this real, some very mundane choices in terms of like cinematography and also in terms of staging and stuff. And then these really hyper exaggerated moments of violence, whether that was intentional or not, I don't know, because I had a lot of trouble finding like what the, I don't know if you want to call it like the philosophical position of the movie or the, like the thematic core of the movie. Like this movie felt like a lot of weird shit orbiting around like empty space. So it was hard for me to tell what choices were intentional and what choices were like a matter of like financial necessity. The fact that this was obviously a rather low budget movie, you know?
I personally really enjoyed the camera work and the staging. Mm-hmm. It, like you said, it seems really mundane, but it also seemed really realistic. And again, it comes back to, you know, my background of it. Reminded me of, like, you know, my time in Japan of, you know, the scenes on the subways and the voiceover of, you know, automatic, like, subway announcements and etc. It's just really, I felt like that was super beneficial to the film in terms of setting a kind of atmosphere.
Yeah, I think I may agree with that. Once again, it's really hard for me to say. I don't know, Sarah, do you have any thoughts on the way the film was shot?
Honestly, it wasn't something I paid very close attention to. I felt like it fit the genre, though, because like you said, it does kind of remind you of a B-horror movie. Low budget, and I honestly was not impressed by some of the, I guess I'll say, prosthetics. and I don't think this is a spoiler, but there's a scene where a woman is just smiling and chopping off her fingers, and you could tell they're like very rubbery and fake. But I also think that kind of adds to the appeal of movies like this. Yeah, that they're like, a little cheap.
Had to, like, ridiculous. Look away during that scene because it went on for so long.
That scene was the one scene in this movie that made me physically uncomfortable.
And it made no sense. It made no sense at all.
I guess. No,
nothing in this movie.
Okay, that's the fundamental problem. I honestly had a lot of trouble deciding how I was going to rate this movie because I had a lot of trouble figuring out how I felt about this movie because I had a lot of trouble figuring out what I had just watched. and I don't know. I mean, with a lot of the other movies that we've done on this podcast, I left it either with a strong negative opinion of the movie or a strong positive opinion of the movie, or maybe just a neutral opinion of the movie, but I had a very clear idea of what the movie was trying to accomplish and why it did or didn't, in my perspective, accomplish that successfully. Like, I had a very clear idea of what Hard Candy was trying to do. I thought what it was trying to do was really dumb, and it did it in a really stupid, like, moronic way. And I'm still not 100% over that movie. But I felt like I was, I mean, qualified isn't the right word, but I felt like I was in a position to say something about the movie because I felt like I understood the movie. I walked away from this movie feeling like I didn't totally understand the movie, and I'm a little bit afraid that I might shortchange the movie because maybe this movie is actually like philosophically coherent or thematically coherent or coherent, period, in a way that I didn't get. Like, I'd hate to shortchange this movie because I didn't get it. But I'd also hate to give this movie excessive credit and act like it's, you know, it's some subversive masterpiece if it actually is like the work of basically a random number generator or a random plot generator or something. But there is, so I'm not the only one who found this movie not necessarily incoherent in terms of plot, although it did have some plot incoherence, but like tonally incoherent, right? And like philosophically incoherent.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think there were interesting, I think like you guys were discussing, there could have been several movies made out of this. And they probably would have made better movies individually than this, which is just all kind of mashed together. And I don't necessarily want to say it's incoherent, but isn't coherent, honestly. And again, like, I think I would have preferred it if they had focused mainly on one character and the people around them rather than a bunch of different people, just thrusting a new person or a group of people on us, and then you see them once and then that's it. It's, you know.
Right.
It was hard for me to, like, again, I was not emotionally involved in this at all, but I appreciate it for what it was, which is just, you know, a gory, crappy Japanese horror flick. And I like the idea behind it, where people are just suddenly, they suddenly want to kill themselves, and there's no reason for it. They never really give a reason for it.
At least not a psychological reason for it.
No.
So I think the thing that bothers me about the film, perhaps more than anything else, is that I think it has ambitions to be more than just a cheesy Japanese horror flick. There are a few moments where the movie shows the potential to be something more than that, something more interesting than that. So I don't know. I was saying earlier before we started recording that I saw, like, one main strain is this, what feels like a very generic sort of police procedural slash horror movie, you know, where there's a setup, and in this case, you know, it's these mass suicides. And the setup has, like, vaguely supernatural or vaguely, like, spooky elements to it, right? And then the cops show up, and they're like, well, is this a crime or isn't this a crime? This is weird. Like, can we even call this a crime? And you know, and you've got the one detective who's, like, the by-the-books detective, and then you have the younger detective who's more into seeing this as some kind of criminal act, even though it's really hard to see how it could be. Anyway, and then, you know, it goes through all the usual movements that you'd see in a film like this. Without giving spoilers, I'm not going to get into exactly what those movements are, but it follows pretty rigidly, although sometimes it's a little weird in the execution, but it follows pretty rigidly the kind of formula you'd expect from a movie where, like, you have a bunch of cops investigating a, like, spooky crime, or a bunch of cops chasing after, like, an insidious sort of Machiavellian serial killer or something. Like, all the beats you would expect from a plot like that, they show up. And if it had just been that movie, I would have had no problem reviewing it and saying, wow, this is garbage. Like, take your half of Vulture and leave, basically. But there's this other strain that you see pop up in a few scenes, and I don't want to mention those scenes specifically, at least not until we get to the spoiler-free part, because those, because I think those scenes are kind of brilliant. But there's this almost, like, absurd, I don't want to say existential, but there's this almost absurd dark comedy that exists within this movie that pops up in like 5 or 6 different scenes. And that comedy could have been a really brilliant film. Like, I was about ready to totally dismiss this film, and then the first one of these scenes, which I'm not going to describe in detail, happened, and I immediately pulled back and was like, wow, this could be brilliant. Like, I was like, oh, okay, they're taking this in a different direction. This could be phenomenal. And even near the end of the film, there's a scene that isn't necessarily comic, but that would be very at home in, like, a Jordowski movie, if I'm saying that correctly, Alejandro, the Jordowski, whatever. He did The Holy Mountain, and he does these kind of very weird, abstract, philosophical, almost like stoner films. I don't want to dismiss him, but they're by calling them stoner films, but they're these very surreal, philosophical kind of films. Or even something like, you know, someone of that mindset, someone who does maybe even a little Terrence Malick or something in there, who does these sort of weird, like, heavily symbolic films that are kind of like more about the visuals that appear on the screen, and they offer these very, as I said, surreal visuals as a way of trying to maneuver towards a kind of philosophical point or to get you to reflect on something about life in a way that you couldn't necessarily just with language or plot. And there's a scene, as I said, almost at the end of the movie that seems to move into that territory. But I never felt like the scene like was positing anything that made sense, or that those scenes fit together to form a coherent whole, or that they fit with the police procedural stuff to make something that made more sense, or that it really fit together. So that's why I feel like obviously some more thought was put into this movie than you'd put into your normal B slasher film. But whatever the director was trying to do here just totally slipped away, or just totally evaded me, or maybe it really was, maybe he just really was dicking around from scene to scene. I don't know.
I think somebody just put too many ideas on the board and then they couldn't decide on just one. So let's put them all in the movie and see how it turns out. But no, I know what you mean about the dark comedy aspect. I think that would have been a much better movie if they had just gone in that direction early on and stuck with it.
It's hard for me to comment on, you know, the purpose of, you know, having it be a little more incoherent and having a bunch of different strains or genres together. But there was something about that hit me as, I guess, thematically beneficial. Like, there was a theme of connection between, you know, all the suicides and different characters, and then a lack of connection, you know, between the characters and what they're doing, and even between the audience and the film. And it seems like there's another strain that runs, like, on a societal level. It seems to be saying something about Japanese culture, which I feel like I have a small glimpse at, but I don't completely understand.
Well, what do you think it may have been saying?
Well, it feels like there's definitely themes of, you know, technology, sort of a sci-fi theme of, you know, technology is breaking people apart, and which you can see, like, you know, in the pop groups, you know, songs. Not sure if that's a spoiler or not, but
no, I don't think that's it. With what you said, I don't think it's a spoiler.
But yeah, like, there's a character that's a hacker, and that sort of lends to another strain, even though it's part of the police procedural, and they go by a pseudonym of, you know, the Bat, and they sort of seem to stand for, like, the internet culture in that situation, and various things happen in the plot that kind of represent. It's sort of difficult to even tell whether or not they're supposed to be symbolically, you know, bad or good, or if the audience is supposed to identify with that. And it seems like these different characters could potentially have larger symbolic meanings, but then again, you know, not sure if I'm reading too much into that.
No, I mean, I don't know that you're necessarily reading too much into it. I think that if there is a broader theme that I could tease out of this at all, it does have to do with, like, the way that technology is leading to kind of cultural alienation, right? That there are a lot of, once again, without getting into spoilers, a lot of this film has to do with, at least superficially has to do with, the way that people relate to technology, whether that's and how technology impacts or culture, or how the culture of technology becomes a means of keeping people from really experiencing, you know, authentic connection. I mean, right, as you said, there's a series of scenes involving a website. There's a lot of scenes involving television and pop music and, like, manufactured kind of mass culture. And I guess what I would say about that is those are not particularly like new themes to be exploring. And I get that. I mean, there are only so many ideas you can explore, and you don't expect every movie to be exploring some profound new concept. In fact, it's often the execution that makes something profound, and not necessarily the ideas that they are trying to the ideas behind that motivated that work of art. Right. I mean, how many pieces of how many books, how many movies are about, like, the way technology alienates us from one another? Like, hundreds, maybe if you include books, probably thousands. But it's more like, what specific details does the film ferret out, you know, does it focus on, and how are those details framed? Like, are they framed in a way that is really evocative, is really effective, really gets at, like, the heart of, like, our modern alienated condition or whatever? And I thought that the targets of this film were pretty ho-hum and been there, done that, in terms of, like, I mean, I understand this film was made in 2000, 2001, so picking on the internet and message boards and stuff was still a relatively new thing. But, like, to go after, the internet in this kind of broad way, or to go after pop music, after television, I mean, this has been done and done and done. And I didn't feel like the way they did it in this film offered any new insight or was particularly innovative. Anyway, maybe we should move on to, like, our reviews of the film, because I think a lot of us are kind of chomping at the bit here to talk about specific scenes. And maybe Sarah, since this is your movie, you can start us off.
I give this two vultures.
Two vultures.
I'm being very correct today. It's definitely not a deep or brilliant movie, but honestly, I think the first time I watched this, I liked it a lot more than the second time around, which was a few days ago. Much older now, so I can see just how stupid it is and how much more potential there was.
Right.
And how they kind of lost that potential. So yeah, 2 out of 5 vultures. Watch it and see for yourself, because there are interesting aspects to this film that I think will make it worth your time.
I actually also was planning to give it 2 out of 5 vultures for pretty much the same reason. I spent a lot of time while I was watching the film, I was kind of going over my vulture rating in my head. And I think it got, like, as low as, like, 1 vulture and as high as, like, 3.5 vultures, depending on, like, where I was in the movie. But ultimately, I feel like this is a pretty mediocre kind of horror procedural that has some really, really amazingly weird scenes mixed in that might be worth seeing just experience those particular scenes without getting into that in too much depth or too much detail.
I would go ahead and give it 6 out of 10 vultures. Got to continue with, you know, subverting the rating scale.
Yeah.
But honestly, I liked the movie. It was, there were certain parts that I liked in particular more than others, and I really liked the honestly the filming style. I wouldn't say it wasn't particularly easy to watch. It took me quite a while to finish it. I couldn't do it in one setting. It was definitely interesting, and I feel it's worth the time.
So I guess that concludes our spoiler-free portion of the podcast. If you've seen the movie already, stick around. We're going to discuss it in more detail. If you haven't, you may want to pause the podcast here, watch the film, come back to it. Or if you've decided you're not going to watch the film and you just want to hear us debate the film, then stick around. But from this point onward, spoilers. So
can we talk about the Rocky Horror-inspired group now?
Yes, please.
Yeah, that was the weird glam rock.
That just came out of nowhere. And they started singing. That had no relation to any other part of the movie. That was like, I didn't, this is going to turn into a musical for 2 minutes.
I got to that part in the movie, and then I messaged Will, and I was like, this has just become bizarre. I couldn't hold back, honestly. That was really disturbing to me, the entire scene. I really disliked that.
No, that scene, to me, really had impact because, well, obviously, this guy's singing, there's all this music going, and then there's murder and rape happening at the same time. So it was a very interesting scene. But, you know, the way they did it, I think, was actually pretty good. Even though, again, I was thinking, this is, come on. You guys watched Rocky Horror way too many times, and now you want to do your own version of that for, like, 5 minutes.
Or possibly.
Has to be representative of Western culture in some way. I mean, like,
well, he does. I'm sorry, what was that?
It sort of seems like it has to.
I mean, he does reference Charles Manson at one point. He says, "I'm the Charlie Manson of the information age."
Yes.
Which, if any moment in this film comes close to like. Having someone come out and say, this is what the film is about, that was probably it, right? I don't know about that scene. That scene was, obviously, I do think the director watched A Clockwork Orange, and I think that it's hard for me to see that scene without seeing the Singing in the Rain scene from A Clockwork Orange. That idea of having this kind of flamboyant personality who likes to sing while people are raped and, you know, otherwise brutalized. But in the context of A Clockwork Orange, that made a lot more sense than it did in the context of this film.
I was just going to say, it was a totally irrelevant scene. There was no purpose there. I guess what the director was going for was just giving you a brief glance at all these different people in this culture going through this thing, the same thing, but going through it differently and maybe taking advantage of it as well. Because not many people were taking advantage of it, except you have this group Genesis who wanted to be famous for this thing and take credit for something that they really didn't have anything to do with. But it still felt very irrelevant to me.
I mean, it is a kind of natural beat in the serial killer procedural films, right? You need the fake out before the end. You have the build up, and it seems like they found the guy, right? And they capture him. It's like, oh, good, all in a day's work, we're done, you know? And then it's like, oh, the credits didn't roll. Could it be that he wasn't really responsible? And in this movie, if you were following the clues at all, it was abundantly obvious that he couldn't have been responsible, or at least solely responsible. I mean, that's a kind of an aside, but one reason why the serial killer or mystery horror elements didn't totally work for me is because the teen pop band, what were they called? Does anyone remember?
Dessert. Like, that's the name kept changing within the movie itself.
Probably because of the subtitles, but yeah, Dessert or whatever they were called. Like, their presence in the movie was so obviously like going to be a big part of the resolution of the movie because of the way they were foregrounded throughout. It's like, oh wait, let's stop for 3 minutes and watch this music video that seems to have nothing at all to do with the plot. Boy, I wonder if this will be important later. And because of that, when the Genesis, when this group of glam rock serial killers, whatever, showed up, I was like, oh, well, this is a fake out. So it does fulfill that purpose. If you were watching that kind of movie and expecting it to be that kind of serial killer that kind of procedural horror movie. But it was so tonally fucking bizarre that like, it definitely threw me for a loop. That was the moment when I was like, oh, yeah, I'm watching a Japanese horror movie.
Yeah, that's another part where I don't know whether it's, you know, stylistic or just acting, but it grated on me of, like, they kidnapped the hacker. That's how that's connected. The hacker was helping the police, and so somehow this glam rock serial killer group finds out about her and kidnaps her and her friend. And as they somehow put her in this, like, white sheet bag.
Yeah.
Carry her away, and all she does is, like, squirm a little bit.
Right.
Like,
There's a point later, not to interrupt you, but there's a point later where she stands up, right, and her hands are totally unbound, and she walks over to the keyboard because there's a computer terminal in this, like, abandoned bowling alley for some fucking reason.
Yeah.
And, like, rather than do the natural thing that you would do or I would do, which is, well, let's take the sheet off so we can use the keyboard, she types in the sheet through the sheet on the keyboard. And it was clear to me, anyway, that she could have removed the sheet without any trouble.
No trouble at all. Even if she had to rip through it, like, that would have been extremely easy.
Right. But sorry, AJ, what were you saying?
I was just going to continue that was particularly absurd, and almost more than the fact that these, you know, glam rock serial killers are hiding out in an abandoned bowling alley, that bothered me.
Yeah. I mean, maybe this is part of what bothered me about that. I mean, we talked a lot about how most of the film is shot in this kind of documentary single camera style, right, which is supposed to seem very naturalistic. And because of that, some of the earlier scenes are all the more disturbing, especially the subway scene at the beginning, which I thought was kind of brilliant.
Oh yeah. I agree with that.
But this scene, it takes such a stylistic left turn or right turn, or like it goes off in such, it becomes such a different kind of scene from such a different kind of film. It becomes so so stylistically excessive with, like, this, you know, over the top monologuing would be serial killer. And even the way it's shot, I'm trying to remember now because this didn't occur to me at the time, but even the way it was shot seemed wrong to me from the level of the way the rest of the film was shot. So maybe this was supposed all done intentionally to be disconcerting, but it was still pretty dumb. I mean, there wasn't anything there in that scene that I felt enriched the movie. It was just a really weird detour that didn't do anything for me.
I definitely agree.
Were there any scenes in particular that either of you really liked? Anything that really stuck with you?
Yeah. I mean, the one scene that the most brilliant scene in this movie, I think. There are two. There are two really good scenes in this movie. And incidentally, neither of the scenes involve any of the cops who are the main protagonists of the movie, or that stupid hacker subplot, or the glam rock, serial killer Charlie Manson guy, or the weird role of human skin, or the cult subplot, or whether that's the subplot or the main plot, or the girl pop band, or any of that. There are two scenes that have basically nothing to do with that I thought were, like, brilliant. One of them is the roof scene with the kid where they're
thank you for that.
Where they are able to which I think the movie implies was actually totally unrelated to the cult and the role of human skin and stuff through, like, I don't know if you want to call it mass delusion or mass, like, susceptibility or whatever, they are able to basically, this whole group of high school kids are able to psych themselves out into committing suicide. And that's where the title of the film, Suicide Club, comes from. And at that moment, I thought, oh, so this is where it's going. Maybe this is going to be a movie about, like, mass psychosis? Like mob mentality, like maybe. I'm sorry, what was that?
Like mob mentality sort
yeah,
of stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Mob mentality and our need to conform and all of that. Like that would be in the Suicide Club title. That would make a lot of sense. Just the way in which, like, maybe we are so secretly despairing or so secretly desperate that the appeal of being part of this kind of mass culture, even if it means like throwing yourself off a roof, like that's more appealing than just the loneliness of existing in your kind of in your kind of isolated life. And but just, I mean, just the way it was filmed, just the way it like builds to that kind of inevitable horrible conclusion where it starts with the kids just fucking around and joking around, and somehow it gets more and more serious and more scary to the point where you can tell that some of them just don't want to do it, but they do it anyway because they can't not do it. I mean, everything about that scene was magnificent, I thought, and belonged in a much better movie. And also that scene was fucking hilarious. I mean, it was like the details and the dialogue and stuff. It was just a really funny, darkly funny scene. And maybe I'll let you guys talk about that, and then I can talk about the other scene I thought was pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the scenes I was going to bring up too. There were two that stuck with me as well, and I'm curious to see if the other scene is the one that you're going to talk about. But the part when they actually jump and then they pan back and you realize not everybody jumped, and
right,
the looks on their faces, because I don't think they all thought that their friends were going to do this. They right. thought, oh, it's a joke. We're not actually going to jump. So that was a perfect scene to me.
Right.
And I wish the rest of the movie had been more like that.
Exactly. And the contrast between that moment and the first scene where they all gleefully jump off of the subway platform in unison, and mm-hmm. they are, like you said before, kind of robotic, to have mm-hmm. this other scene where it's more human. And then yes. after they've jumped, they're like, and a few of them are left up there. It's like, I guess we better jump too. And the last girl is obviously just so traumatized that she's like, fuck it. You know?
Yeah. Honestly, I feel like that contrast that you just spoke about is, like, one of the best parts of the film, which actually kind of lights on something else, is this sort of ideal of suicide versus the reality of suicide. And I would have appreciated if they had explored that quite a bit more. There's another part that sort of almost seems to touch on that, and that's when one of the policemen finds out that his entire family has, you know, killed themselves, and gets a phone call from one of the cult members, I think.
I guess, yeah.
Decides to kill himself, and, you know, that's supposed to be, I feel, one of, you know, more powerful parts of the film, but
right.
it just sort of touches on, you know, like this, it touches on more, less of the from comedy to, you know, realism, mm-hmm. and more of the from police procedural to realism,
yeah,
type of thing.
See, I thought that scene really didn't work for me at all. Because, I mean, it's exactly the note you expect from this kind of movie, where it's like, oh my god, oh no, he's going to kill himself now. And there's a creepy little child's voice on the phone who spews some pseudo-philosophical babble that is very in keeping with, like, a bad serial killer movie, but kind of doesn't really tell you anything about, like, what the film is about. Like, well, like, your connection with other people lives on, but what about your connection with yourself? Does that survive after death? And it's like, and it's all this stuff that I'm sure when the screenwriter was writing it, he's like, oh, this is so poetic. Like, it's going to be so scary, and this is going to really make people think. But in actuality, it says fucking nothing.
No, like, at all. It makes no sense. No sense at all. And then you had his, was it his daughter in the background?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, what happened there?
Yeah, I was wondering, when does she kill him herself? Why doesn't he stop her? She seemed fine. I mean, she was obviously traumatized and covered with blood, but when he came in the door, she seemed okay. And then, like, yeah, later she's just dead with the rest of his family. Like, huh. Like, did she finish the job, like, in those few minutes when he's looking around the house and trying to figure out what happened? I mean, I would say I'm going to go and see if I can find, you know, my family right away. But whatever. I mean, but anyway, the other scene that I really like is another one of the suicide scenes, actually. And that's the one where this girl is walking down the street, or this woman is walking down the street, and her boyfriend, who has thrown himself out the... you know, the top floor, off the top floor of the building, or out of his window near the top floor of his apartment building, lands on top of her. and there's this really weird, surreal, and I thought pretty funny moment where she's like obviously in shock. And she's like, oh, and she's, it's you. And she's like, why'd you do that? And he's like, she's like, oh, you're probably going to die, aren't you? And he's like, yeah. it seemed like a movie out of a much better dark comedy film, where it's just like it's played in such a nonchalant way, which on the one hand seems totally not in keeping with what happened, but also on the other hand is totally in keeping with like shock, the experience of like shock, and also just how mundane these suicides have become. But I don't know, that scene just to me seemed really clever. I don't know. It was, I mean, I laughed out loud during that scene. It was one of the few moments in the film that got any kind of a response out of me. And I don't know. I thought it was pretty, pretty great. I mean, I don't know what else to say.
No, that really was a great scene. And again, like with that one and the rooftop scene, if they had kept it in that theme for the entire movie, this probably would have been a 5-vulture movie.
Yeah, I agree. If this was just a series of scenes of increasingly absurd suicide, people responded to that, I think that could have been a really great black comedy. But as it stands, there wasn't enough of that.
There was another scene that stayed with me, not because I didn't really have any sort of emotional response for me necessarily, but I appreciated it because it tricked me. It was the scene with the two nurses. And this was pretty early on, and you know one of them is going to commit suicide. And at first you think it's one, and then it actually turns out to be the other. So they tricked me with that. And even after watching this like 10 years ago, I still couldn't remember which one it was.
Right.
I liked that scene, even though, again, it, like, you just met these people, you don't know them, you don't really care about them. And it wasn't even really funny, I would say, the guy falling on his girlfriend. And
right. But there was, I mean, there was
a, high school girls, but
right. Yeah. There was a reversal in that. I mean, there was like a double reversal in that scene where you're like, oh, okay, one of them's about to kill herself. Oh, she didn't. Oh, I guess the other one actually did kill herself. No, wait, maybe not. And then the other one comes back and it's like, oh, she's going to kill herself now. And it's like, boom, boom, boom. I know. I guess your appreciation for that scene probably has to do with how long you're willing to put up with that kind of, like, with those sorts of plot manipulations, you know? I don't know. Was there anything else in this movie that anyone... You really haven't said all that much yet, AJ. Did you have something that you wanted to talk about?
I really like the subplot with the girl whose boyfriend falls on her. There's really no particular reason why I liked that. Those scenes where it follows her around, that seems like another sort of, you know, different type of movie to me. It seemed kind of like a Studio Ghibli movie.
Almost. Wait. Explain.
Well, it was just really like tonal of the music that they chose during those scenes, and like how they used the camera on her, like it sort of made it seem almost animated.
That's interesting.
And at points you could see where it'd be better if there was some sort of weird non-existent animal companion following after her.
I mean, I think all movies would be, and I think everyone will agree with me here, that all movies would be improved by an animated animal companion.
Yeah.
Certainly that's never Certainly no movie has ever been ruined by something like that.
But I really liked that until it got to the point where and I really liked the part where she, you know, figured out that it was the pop group all along. Yeah. Because it made no
really?
Sense.
I thought that really scene was so that. Dumb.
Honestly, I love that scene because it literally does make no sense, and it was just this sort of, I don't know, it seemed like a mockery almost, and I don't even know of what, but it seemed kind of perfect.
I mean, I was not sure about that scene. I mean, if I was more confident that the rest of this movie was a satire, I think I would have appreciated that scene more. Because that scene, and then her introduction into the weird skin-shaving child pop star cult had almost like a Thomas Pynchon kind of Crying of Lot 49 sort of quality to it. And if you don't know Pynchon, he writes these books that are like packed with a high level of detail, and it's really hard to make sense of which details are actually plot relevant. And the whole point there is it's supposed to be about like how disorienting modern culture is. And the Crying of Lot 49 in particular is it's about the protagonist is kind of trying to get to the bottom of what seems to be this really complicated conspiracy theory involving a lot of different symbols and interpreting her environment in a way that might be incredibly perceptive or might be borderline schizophrenic. You know, whether you're finding significance in all these small, inane seeming details. And to me, that moment where she sees the poster and somehow she gets the positioning of their fingers plus the numbers on their jerseys to spell out the word suicide, and then she uses it to call this hotline and they like invite her to this show and the curtain comes up. That's also the scene that I thought like seemed like something out of like the Holy Mountain or a Malick film or something, in that it's this really surreal sort of series of images that don't make a hell of a lot of sense, but maybe have some kind of emotional part to it. But anyway, that whole sequence from like her discovery of the cult into her induction in the cult did have a real Crying of Lot 49 Thomas Pynchon quality. And I wasn't, but it could also just have been a really stupid resolution to a really stupid serial killer movie. So I don't know. Like, what was that? This is at the heart of my feelings about the film. Like, if you look at that scene in one way, it's kind of ingenious. But if you look at it in another way, it's also really fucking dumb. And I don't know. Which was it? Was it both? I don't know.
See, personally, I really disliked kind of everything past the phone call that, you know, past them inviting her to the scene. I felt like...
Really?
Yeah, I really didn't like that. But the scene where she figures everything out, like you said, it like almost has this type of, you know, schizophrenic sort of undertone to it. I really enjoyed that. And everything before that, that involved that character, I really enjoyed. But the scene where, like, you know, she goes and she's met with these a bunch of children in an auditorium as she stands on stage and they reiterate their, you know, pseudo psychological babble, and then, you know, it just increasingly bizarre, you know, events occur there. She's in a room with a bunch of other women, and then like a portion of her skin is shaved off. But in this room, for some reason, there's a bunch of young chickens running around on the floor.
Yeah.
Like, it makes no sense, but it feels like it should or might have had some type of symbolic, you know, explanation, but there's no way to like determine that or understand that. You can't really decide whether or not it's just garbage or if it's actually meaning something.
I just don't understand why anybody would want their skin shaved like that. You know, like, why would you want to be skinned? That's,
I don't know.
For anyone, for anything, for any cause. No, I'm keeping that shit. You're not. And how do they like walk around all day after that, right? How are they not, first of all, gushing blood?
Right.
How are they not in agony? Like, how do they do anything?
How,
but I think I would probably just kill myself at that point too, honestly.
Yeah.
Maybe that explains the whole movie, right?
Yeah, they're just in discomfort.
There you go.
I don't know. I mean, the resolution of the movie didn't really answer much, but also the resolution of the movie. I mean, there's a very self-conscious moment at the end of the film. I think it's during the song at the end where the teen pop group, I think, I don't remember this specifically, but basically says, like, well, I bet you're trying to figure out what just happened. You know, there's this moment where it's like, I don't think you're supposed to be able to fully understand
right.
what happened. And that's kind of the point of the movie to a degree that maybe it's using the structure of of this kind of procedural horror film where you get a resolution at the end. But in reality, like, life is this sort of existential mess and making sense of it is impossible. And I would be very willing, very receptive to that message if it had come at the end of a better movie.
That seems fair.
But I did actually, the scene that you really didn't like with the where they basically have that improvised cheese grater and they take off the skin in the, like, backstage container and the little chickens are running. I mean, I thought that scene could have been part of that better movie. I didn't know what to make of it in the context of this movie, but in a movie that was like a more surreal sort of reflection on suicide and why people kill themselves, that might have worked better. I don't know. I mean, I didn't dislike that scene. I had a lot of appreciation for the fact that that scene was in the movie at all because it was so fucking bizarre. But it wasn't like really stupid and off-putting in the way that the, like, Charlie Manson glam rock guy or the you know, Genesis, in the way that was bizarre. I felt like it was surreal and dreamlike in a way that could have fit in a better movie, maybe. So while we're speaking about the end of the film, what did you guys make of the fake out where the girl with the butterfly tattoo, not the girl with the dragon tattoo, but the girl with the butterfly tattoo, decides not to kill herself?
I really like that because I liked her as a character.
I also like that, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought it was great that for once there's somebody who kind of made that commitment and then backed out of it. Because most of these people just do it nonsensically. Yeah. No matter what. No matter if they're a kid or a parent or whatever. But I like that because she seemed to have a little more depth. She seemed to, you know, be more intelligent than a lot of the other characters. And I guess they were sort of implying some weird connection between her and the one detective, the one who, you know, doesn't off himself.
Yeah.
Because he really wanted to stop her from doing this because he actually for once knew who it was going to be. So I actually really like that.
I think what I really liked about it was the fact that it contributed towards this feeling that the suicides are more realistic and that they're unpredictable. And it also creates this sort of, like, not a plot hole, but, like, you know, this question in the audience's mind of, you know, who's going to do it, who's not going to do it. Like, there's no set of concrete rules as there would be in a police procedural that they'd use to, you know, determine who the culprit is. They'd be like, well, here's what's happening. Here's the effects of that. But in this movie, you're left at the end, mostly, like, there's a large part of you that's confused because there was no reason to who was doing the suicides and, you know, why. And you're like, but this one must have been a real suicide, or were these ones murders? Were they all just suicides? And then there's, you know, the individuals that don't kill themselves when they're supposed to kill themselves. There was another scene where the police got a phone call from a young boy who must have been in the cult.
He must have been, because he's the same boy, right? Who calls the cop later when he kills himself, and then the same boy who she, the girl with the butterfly tattoo, talks to on the phone at the end, near the end of the film.
Mm. And he calls the police and informs them that there's going to be another suicide, another mass suicide on the same train platform as the 54 girls who killed themselves in the initial scene. And the police spend a lot of time there, you know, trying to determine who's going to kill themselves among, you know, a bunch of normal subway goers.
Right.
And then it ends up not happening, and you're left with this sort of confusion regarding the rules of the universe in the movie.
Right. I think you're right about that, and I think that that last, not last scene, but penultimate scene underscores that. The question of to what degree, an overarching question in this movie, I think, is to what degree the people committing suicide have free will.
Right.
And I don't think that last scene strings that question out instead of answering it, right? Because it's equally possible that the cult basically told her, you're going to go to the subway and kill yourself, and that she then chose not to, that she chose to live. But it's also possible that the experience, like, that the cult is giving different dictates to different people, and that her experience with the cult transformed her in a different way than it transformed some of the other people. So it may still not be an act, it may not be an act of free will or rebellion that she chose not to kill herself. And likewise, that scene you alluded to earlier, AJ, maybe all of the people who were supposed to participate in that second mass suicide on the subway platform backed out. Or maybe that was a bait and switch on the part of the cult to get the cops down on the subway platform so they could then orchestrate that other series of mass suicides that took place, like, all over the city, right? Where the woman mutilates herself with the knife, and the guy takes a lot of pills, and the other three women hang themselves, and the guy kills himself in a comedy club. Like, maybe it was a way to divert the police's attention. Maybe, but maybe not. Maybe these people are really making a choice. And I think it's good. I will say that I do think it's good that the movie left that an open question, and that a worse movie would have answered that question and would have answered it in a stupid way.
There would have been no other answer than something stupid.
Yeah, exactly. To answer that question. Right.
Yeah, because, like, in real life, that's a question, you know? Like,
right.
Is there free will? Like, you know, not to such a degree, but there's always a question of motivation. And attempting to answer that question would have been, you know, biting off more than they could chew, probably.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, how much of something like, how much of a suicide is personal choice? How much of it is errant neurochemistry? You know, how much of it is just the wrong neurotransmitters flood into the wrong synapse at the wrong time and you jump off a building? And also, since the movie deals so much with the issue of social conformity, to leave that an open question, I think, is a good thing. Like, to what degree do you have a choice about whether to conform in a social situation? Can people really be, is this kind of mass hysteria or mass brainwashing a realistic concept? The idea that these people just are basically put into trance and just do this thing? Or can you actually remove yourself from that situation and act against the mob and chart your own path? So once again, there are interesting philosophical strains in this movie, and it's just a shame that so much of it is this kind of poorly acted police procedural. So I'm not really sure how long this has been going on for at this point, but we're probably reaching the point where we could start to wrap this discussion up. Did anyone have any final thoughts or anything else that they wanted to talk about before we close the door on Suicide Club?
Not really. I feel like we covered actually a lot more than I expected to.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I don't really have any closing thoughts on this.
I mean, in summation, like, that was a Japanese movie.
It was. You know, Not to sound too much like I've been afflicted by the schizophrenia of this movie, but I have noticed an odd, like, interlocking, like, chain effect to the movies we've done so far. Because, I mean, I'm not sure about the first film, but if you start with, like, The Redemption of General Butt Naked, okay, well, that's a movie about child soldiers. And then the next movie we did was Kite, was a Japanese film that was also about child soldiers. And then, wait, did I skip one there? I don't even know.
Hard candy.
Oh, wait, oh, no, okay, sorry.
Yeah.
That's the interconnectedness, right? It's like, you have one movie that's about, like, child soldiers and precocious kids basically going out and, like, brutalizing people. And then you have another movie about precocious kids, well, a precocious kid brutalizing someone. And then you have a Japanese movie about precocious kids killing people. I mean, in Kite, I don't know. And then you have this, which has precocious kids killing themselves. And it's also another Japanese subtitled.
Precocious kids, like, you know, orchestrating the suicides.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. That's and given my given my stated hatred of precocious children, I have to wonder. But anyway, I can promise you that I've already selected my movie for next time, and it contains no precocious children, I think.
Damn it.
Oh, so we're going to break the precocious child chain.
I'm going to bring it back then. And AJ's going to bring it back.
Probably.
No, I am. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's because AJ and her precocious child thing. So anyway, I think that next time we're going to be doing the Swedish black comedy film Songs from the Second Floor, since it's my choice, which is a very different movie, I think, than this movie.
It better be.
It's I would say it's very different.
I'm just going to add another movie that might be worth watching is Strange Circus, which is by the same director as Suicide Club. It's another mindfuck movie. It's been a long time since I watched it. Mm-hmm. I just remember it being very, very confusing and violent and crazy and schizophrenic. So I might force you guys to watch that just because.
Well, we may have to revisit that at some point.
And, yeah, because you're going to get a similar style, I believe, as to this one, but a different atmosphere altogether.
Well, so if someone listens to this podcast, watches Suicide Club and really enjoys it and want to watch another equally bizarre film by the same director, then Strange Circus is the place to go.
Yep, that's your jam.
Okay. So I think that's it. I don't think there's anything more to say. I think we can probably call it a day here. I'm sure AJ was relieved, Sarah, that this movie did not contain any penises.
Yes, I forgot
to put the penis in.
Yeah. So, all right. So I guess that's it. Why belabor this? We'll be back in another couple of weeks with another episode, and I don't know. Oh. Keep living your life or whatever.
No, like, Happy New Year, guys. God.
Oh, yeah.
Happy 2017.
Yeah. Try to enjoy it.
Yep. As the pop band Desart says, live as you please.
What was that? Live yourself. As you please?
Yep. And kill yourself.
And kill yourself. There you go. That's a good moral for this podcast. Live as you please and then fucking kill yourself.